talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. Talk that matters. Germ Warfare and Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Germ Warfare at tntradio.live. That's my email address. Thank you to all the people who constantly email. I really do appreciate it. I particularly enjoy knowing where you're emailing me from. In actual fact, one of the things that I do when I get emails is I first look for where you're emailing me from. I'm more interested in that than I am about the actual content of your email. I hope that isn't offensive, but I really do love seeing that the audience stretches right across the world. It is really phenomenal. It's mind-blowing. I didn't ever think that I'd be doing this, and the sheer scale of what the internet has allowed us to do. I don't think 20 years ago I could have done this, talking to an audience right around the world. It really is mind-blowing. Jump into the live chat on TNT's website or I think in the app, and this is my last show for 3 weeks, so I hope you enjoy it. This is a real banger of a show, so you're going to want to listen back to this one, that I can promise you. But Alex, are we ready? Let's actually get to this. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Digging deeper into the news.
It's the topics that matter to me.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, Andrew Johnson, thank you for joining me in the trenches. It's been a while.
Yo, thanks for inviting me back, Jeremy. Very pleased to be here. Thank you.
You and I are chatting about a remarkably simple yet remarkably complicated idea. And I think a great place to start is that let's just right off the bat say that we're chatting about directed energy weapons, particularly around 9/11. But what I want to ask you before we even chat about that is, how do we approach this? Because I've tried with friends, and the moment I mention directed energy and 9/11, they start laughing.
Yeah, it's a common problem, Jeremy. And just speaking personally, really, I don't kind of approach it with anybody. In fact, I think, you know, you have to wait until they become curious and ask you a question. And then you start at a basic level. And sometimes even that doesn't work. In fact, I've just been with somebody just before coming on today, and I was relating a story about talking to one of my friends from university. And really, you know, I was trying to start off talking about, you know, when you say directed energy weapons, we're talking about them in relation to what happened on 9/11. And there would be some listeners that what you want about, it was planes and hijackers and all of that, or they might say, no, it was bombs. It was clearly blown up. And Bush even said it was bombs in the Pentagon or something, whatever the thing he said was. And I think, what they are not about, which planet are they on? Maybe the one behind Andrew. But, you know, this is the problem. And this friend from university, you know, he's got a degree in biochemistry, and I was trying to start off with just saying, well, look, are the World Trade Center towers there, or are they gone? You know, and because he'd looked at my website, which is checktheevidence.com, and he said, oh, I've looked at your website, you know, and I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. And if what you said was true and what was on your website was true, I would have heard about it in the news, you know. And so this idea of how do we approach it, my answer is, two answers I give are, one is I don't really know, and the other is, well, it depends on the scenario and who you're talking to and what their experience is. You may approach it by asking them a question saying, well, do you believe the official story of 9/11, for example? And then you might want to start going into, well, have you considered this aspect of it, like the physics of the plane crashes, or have you watched the videos of the towers so-called collapsing? They didn't collapse, but of course that's the word that you commonly use because that's the word that most people would use. And then if you say to them, well, actually, if you look closely, that the towers didn't collapse, you know, they said, well, no, of course they collapsed. What else can they have done? But then in that instance, you see, you can't, and I say that you can't really do this without images. So you need to have, you know, your little tablet with you or your phone or something. So if you want to get an entree into this, A, they need to be curious. And B, when they are curious, you need to have images to show them. And my own, you know, approach to that years ago, now I don't really do it so much now, is I printed out a little booklet with some of the primary pictures that Dr. Judy Wood had put in her book, Where Did the Towers Go? And on the website, drjudywood.com, I'd got about like 10 or 15 pictures or something, and I put them in a little booklet, which was about 10 pages long. And when I was at these events, I wouldn't normally do this in the pub or in a cafe or anything like that, or a restaurant. I never did that because I didn't carry this booklet around with me. But when I was at talks, I gave talks and the mind, body, spirit events and UFO events and stuff. And many people had never heard about what happened on 9/11. They'd never heard about directed energy weapons. So I get this booklet out then, and at least in that audience, I knew they were probably going to have some level of curiosity, and they would at least stay with me for the first couple of pictures. And then after this page four, they might think, oh no, I can't take this, and walk off. You know, I didn't really know. But the point is, you know, to answer your question, you need to find their level of knowledge, their level of experience, and their level of interest, and then go from there, really, I think, you know, and that's the starting point. And if you try and get judged that initially, you might end up saving yourself quite a bit of time, because you'll just think quite quickly, nah, they're not going to get this. There's no point in even starting the conversation, even though it's, you know, it's a really, really important conversation to have. It's one of many, and sometimes you just can't have those conversations with people that you're in company with. They're just not profitable. They just don't work, you know, in my experience.
But that's an interesting point that you raise, because I've, in my personal journey in trying to piece this puzzle together, I've got Judy's book. I've gone through it. It is very, very persuasive, and it's by far one of the best accounts that I can see that has happened. But the problem is, it's so much to take in that you have to kind of split the whole thing apart, because it's a highly complex concept. The idea of directed energy makes no sense to anybody in the main. However, I did notice, Andrew, that with that recent situation that happened in Maui, suddenly I'm seeing the conversation popping up. Have you noticed?
Yes. Very much so, Jeremy. Yes. In fact, quite directly, you know, that led to a spike in the sales of Dr. Judy Wood's book, because one of the things that I've been doing is I've been handling the sales of Where Did the Towers Go in the UK, which is, of course, where I live. I've lived here all my life, you know. So I first got copies of the Where Did the Towers Go book back in 2011. And, you know, to say that this book is now 12 years old, or been published for 12 years, the sales have remained constant throughout the last 12 years, really. And they've got, you know, they've had spikes up and down. And just with the Maui events, they have led to a spike in the sales. And then, of course, we've now had the 22nd anniversary of 9/11, so they've got another spike for that. So, and in terms of how do you start these conversations, you know, going back to the previous question, well, I think the starting of conversations has perhaps got a little bit easier now that we've gone into sort of living in clown world, you know, as many people have said, and things have been turned upside down with COVID and all of that. And many more people have said, well, what the hell is really going on? It's still not, you know, everybody, but maybe the population, percentage of the population has gone up from 1% to 7% or something, perhaps, just as a, you know, rough guide. So I think there is that element to it, that there's now a greater level of curiosity. And one of the things I've been saying to friends recently, again, from sort of a personal perspective, is that, you know, I'm just a regular guy. You know, people can look me up. I've had people turning up on my doorstep saying, oh, hello, Andrew, can I have a Judy Wood book off you? I said, yeah, no problem. Come in, have a cup of tea, you know. And that's what I'm like. I just live in a normal suburb just outside Derby, you know, and I've got two grown-up children now. My wife was a nurse and all of that, and I work for the Open University. I'm not you know, involved with military. I've never been involved with politics, nothing like that. I've worked as a software engineer, and I now work as a tutor, technology students. I used to assess disabled students. Regular stuff, you know. I've no connection to any, I didn't know Judy Wood before any of this. You know, I don't know any high-powered academics, you know. And so something's going on that's been drawing me into all of this over these years, right? And And so I was saying to people, well, a couple of weeks ago, I went on this Stu Peters show. Many of your listeners may be familiar with Stu Peters. And, you know, he's like a modern day Alex Jones almost, you know. And I was surprised that he chose to have me on, because a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about in relation to the directed energy weapons and Dr. Wood's research has been censored, not by just by the mainstream, but it's been even more severely censored by the alternative media. You know, and this is what my books are about. Two of my books are about. So I was surprised when he had me on that, but that wasn't the main point of what I was going to say. So he had me on. I had no idea. He wanted to do 15 minutes. And I said, well, that's not really enough. And I thought he was going to say, or his producer was going to say, oh, well, you'll have to just fit it in. But he didn't. They gave me an extra 15 minutes. So we talked for half an hour, you know. And that was that. And I didn't know what to expect. I didn't really care. He said, can I speak to you? And anyone that wants to speak to me, I'll say, yeah, okay. You know, by and large, there are certain exceptions. But then I found out when he put this video out that the guy he had on after me, he was pretty much backing up the official narrative. You know, I was talking about directed energy weapons, towers turning to dust. I was talking about John Hutchison. I was talking about people being levitated, all the stuff that you've touched on before, you know, and showed some slides that Dr. Wood had made and I'd made and stuff. And then after me, he has this guy called Buzz Patterson. And like this guy, he used to be a military aide to President Clinton. You know, he was ex-military, you know, and he's some military consultant now. He'd been in the military for 10 years or something. So I'm thinking, and then this other guy after that, he had another guy on who was also backing up the official account, and he was a colonel at the Pentagon. So you got flipping, you know, Muggins here, just some ordinary guy with it. Okay, I've got a degree in computer science, but so many more highly qualified people than me around, even in this neighborhood where I live, you know. And I'm thinking, how the hell did I get on a radio program? And apparently this Stu Peters even goes out on TV. I don't know where, but I'm thinking, how the hell does that happen? You know, how is this just me with a little website, you know, furtling about, get on to this show to talk about this for half an hour? And I think these are two other guys really on, like 15 minutes each or something. I mean, you can go and listen to it. It's Stu Peters on the directed energy weapons or something. You'll find it's on Rumble. It's not on YouTube because, of course, they've deleted a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is kind of a part of an answer to your original question, really, in that I was approached. You know, I didn't contact Stu Peters and say, look, I want to be on your show and tell everybody what I know. No, I didn't contact him. His producer contacted me. So, you know, that was a bit of a surprise. And I just spoke to him in the same way that I'm speaking to you, very matter of fact, because I don't have an agenda. You know, I don't. And I was saying to this conversation I was having with someone, I don't want to be famous. I don't want to make any money out of this. You know, I just want to try and educate people to what actually happened. And that's, again, why Dr. Judy Wood and I got on so well. We shared that same goal. You know, we just want to show people the evidence to say, look, you look at this. You know, you look at the evidence for directed energy weapons, and if you can see where we've gone wrong, right, you tell us. You tell us where we're wrong, you explain why this is wrong, and then if, you know, we'll look at that, and if we agree with you, we'll change it. We'll correct things, you know, and that's the way we operate, you know.
We're going to a break in about 3 minutes, so just before we do that, we can chat about the meat after the break, but something that you brought up there, which is something that really piqued my interest, and that is the censorship. If this conversation was so stupid, if it was so ridiculous, if it was so clown-willed, there would be no need to censor it, but it is so heavily suppressed, and that, for me, is a red flag, surely.
Yes, very much so. I mean, you know, again, you find out, for example, Dr. Judy Wood, again, the main research is free at drjudywood.com. We've talked about this book, Where Did the Towers Go? If you want to buy it, great. But, you know, I don't mind whether you buy it or not. You know, it's entirely up to you. But, you know, we found, and why I got involved with Dr. Judy is she was being censored. You know, she was using a free website. She joined the Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which I joined, and they weren't promoting her research. And when I'd looked at this, I thought, hang on. Yeah, what do you mean? This is scientifically sound, by my understanding. You know, I have some background in science. I did a degree in computer science and physics. You know, I don't have a PhD in mechanical engineering and interferometry and all the qualifications that Dr. Judy Wood has. But I knew enough physics to know that what she said was true. And all these other guys couldn't tell me why what she said wasn't true. So the first level of censorship that I experienced was within the so-called 9/11 truth movement. Forget about the mainstream, you know, we weren't even getting a whisper on there, even though some of the stuff was blindingly obvious when you looked at it. And then being said by the mainstream media, as she put, as Dr. Wood herself points out, they actually pointed out the lack of building at the end of the events. Peter George Stoffelopoulos said this, and Peter Jenkins, he's the journalist, he's dead now, he was pointing it out as well. So they were all pointing out what Dr. Judy did on the day itself, and then everyone shut up about it within 24 hours, and it was never spoken of again. And when I brought this up, you know, in the UK 9/11 truth movement, I was censored too, and I've written about that in my book, you know, or maybe not censored, but I was soft censored, and people tried to push me around and say that Judy Wood was an idiot and I didn't know what I was talking about. And these were my friends that said this, people I knew, people I'd met personally, you know, said this. So, you know, work that one out. I'm still wondering on the reasons for that. Of course, I have suspicions, but the censorship is a big problem indeed. Yes.
There's a comment in the live chat from Catherine. She says, "And the way Stu Peters set you up before having those other guests on speaks volumes too. He's a grifter." On that note, Andrew, I'm just quickly going to go to a break. My name is Jim, chatting to Andrew Johnson. This is TNT Radio.
You should hear what Hervoy Morich is talking about.
Unconscionable. Baby boomers are becoming homeless at a rate not seen since the Great Depression. Many baby boomers across the U.S. are now coming to terms with the hard reality that working for your entire adult life is no longer enough to guarantee you'll have a roof over your head in later years. The fact we're seeing elderly homelessness is something that we have not seen since the Great Depression. I saw it when I was in Texas recently. Elderly folks in coffee shops just chilling because they've got nowhere else to go with their belongings as well. And you know, this is the neo-feudalism. This is the Great Reset underway, neo-feudalism. May the odds be ever in your favor. Yeah. Also, credit card losses are rising at the fastest pace since the Great Financial Crisis. Credit card companies are racking up losses at the fastest pace in almost 30 years outside of the Great Financial Crisis of 2008. According to Goldman Sachs. Again, you're seeing all these signs and signals, the homelessness, the neo-feudalism, people not being able to pay their credit cards anymore. On and on it goes.
Hervoy Morich on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'm Cal Fire Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
CO2 sustains all life on Earth, but now it's in long-term decline. We face the return of an ice age. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, Andrew, where did the towers go?
Well, as Dr. Judy Wood has shown us, they did not burn up. They did not slam to the ground. They turned to dust in midair. So that sentence right there, or three sentences, however you punctuate it, that's actually what happened. And she was able to establish that after minimum 3 years research, but probably at least 6-7 years research before she was sure that that's what happened. And so that's what you establish happened. That's a starting point. It's a bit like I was saying in the earlier conversation, are the towers there or are they gone? You know, you can establish that pretty clearly. You know, you don't have to worry about disinformation or trolls, you can just look at pictures of New York and see whether the towers are still there or not, or you can go to New York and see where they are. I mean, I went to New York last in 2017, so I know personally they're not there anymore. I went and looked. And so if you agree with Dr. Judy Wood and you say, well, they're no longer there and they turn to dust, how do you establish that that's what happened? Well, how about you look at some videos? And one of the key ones, again, you have to look these up. This goes back to my earlier point. You really need the images to show what happened and the video clips. And they back up all of this. So you start with the videos. Well, we've got this video, the classic video we talk about is the so-called spire, which is this 70 stories high column of steel. Now, there are about, I think, three or four, maybe as many as eight different videos. And I did a little compilation of these probably 9 or 10 years ago, and I use it in talks, where you can see this 70 stories of steel, and this is a steel column from the core columns, the strongest part of the building, literally turning to dust in about 8 seconds. And you can see this after the main destruction of the building has actually taken place, okay? And you can see this justification, as Dr. Judy Wood has called it, it's not vaporization. You know, maybe we'll get onto that later. You can see this happening. So you then asked, you know, and I said this years ago, well, if that's steel and that's correct, and nobody challenges that, nobody challenges that that was indeed 70 stories of steel, how does 70 stories of steel turn into dust in 10 seconds? Is it bombs? Well, no, because bombs make loud noises and you get bright flashes off these bombs and nuclear devices. So it can't have been that. And so that's the first visual evidence. So you've got visual evidence that the towers turned to dust. Then you can say, well, what if the videos are fake? You know, Simon Schack, who did the September Clues series, he came out in about, I don't know, 2012, said, look, Andrew, Dr. Judy Wood, she doesn't know what she's talking about, because I know that all the videos from 9/11 are fake, all of them, you know. And I, of course, said, well, that's ridiculous. But let's just take him at his statement as being true. All the videos are fake. So what other evidence have you got that the towers turned to dust? Well, of course, let's just disregard the thousands of people that saw it happen. And we'll say that they're all bad observers. What else have you got? Well, how about the seismic signatures? You know, these seismic monitors, they measure earthquakes. And there's an earthquake monitoring station at the Palisades, which is some miles out from New York. I forget exactly where this is, but you can find this out easily enough. And these seismometers were running all the time throughout the events of 9/11. There was a little earthquake in the, I don't know, Aleutian Islands or something, and it picked that up from thousands of miles away. And there was some quarry blasts that it picked up from, I don't know, somewhere north of New York. This is all in the Where Did the Towers Go book, by the way, and some of it's on the drjudywood.com website. And so the seismic signature, the seismometers were running when the towers disappeared. And if you look at the seismic traces very carefully, as Dr. Wood did, and this is in her book, it shows that the buildings didn't actually hit the ground in solid form. Because if they had, they would have caused a mini earthquake. And that mini earthquake did not happen, okay? So there's that piece of evidence. And that's studied at some length, and the way that these seismic waves traveled, you know, they normally have a particular pattern. And if you know about how earthquakes are monitored, you would understand this pattern, and Dr. Wood explains that a little bit in her book. So there's a bit of science there, which of course is not obvious to you and I, and, you know, and stuff. So you got the seismic evidence. What else have you got? Let's say the seismic evidence is all fake or was planted, you know, as disinformation. What else? Well, you've got other situation with the so-called bathtub. This is the other evidence that Dr. Wood discusses in her book and in her presentations. So the World Trade Center's towers, the both of them, they were constructed inside this thing called the bathtub. And that was like an enormous concrete wall. And outside of that is the Hudson River. And this land that the World Trade Center was built on was reclaimed from the river. And within the towers were constructed. Okay. And if you look at the reports from the cleanup operation after the towers had disappeared, they were worried that earth moving equipment would, you know, accidentally bang into the bathtub wall and break it. and cause that whole area to flood. Okay, so what if that's the case? Then how come the so-called falling down, the collapse of a 210-story buildings with all that rubble and the sharp bits of metal, how come that didn't break the bathtub wall? Well, of course it didn't, because if it had, the whole of Lower Manhattan would have flooded, because you've got the Hudson River coming in. And they were worried about that during the cleanup, but for some reason they weren't worried about it happening during the destruction of the towers. And that's all very well documented as well. So that's another piece of evidence. And then one of the other very powerful pieces of evidence, which shows that the towers turned to dust before they hit the ground, is what happened to some of the firefighters that are in Stairwell B. Mickey Cross, you can find his testimony in various documentaries, official documentaries from Discovery Channel and things like that. They've done documentaries on the firefighters that rescued people during 9/11. One of them was Mickey Cross, another was Jay Jonas, and they described being in a part of one of the towers. I think it was the North Tower. I'm not as hot on the details as Dr. Wood is. You just have to read her book. So if I make any mistakes, these are my mistakes, not hers, by the way. So if you listen to their testimony, in other words, Mickey Cross, Jay Jonas, Mickey Cross tells this story. He's coming down the stairs. He's helping some lady down or something. And he hears the buildings coming apart, and he tries to climb inside his helmet. He's pulling his helmet down onto his head. And he says that his helmet's trying to lift off his head. Why would his helmet try to lift off his head? Well, we'll forget that for now. And he says he's trying to climb to his helmet, and then he's hearing this noise around him. Not explosions, not at this point. And he looks up, and what does he see? He sees blue sky. Yeah, he's on about, 5-6 stories up from the ground. And with Jay Jonas, and there were 14 people walked out of there alive. And you can hear the radio messages from them, because they didn't know where they were. The rescue teams, because just all around them was complete devastation. They didn't know where Mickey Cross and Jay Jonas were. They couldn't tell where they were. But within a couple of hours or later in the day, they walked out unscratched. How is that possible when 100 stories of building were above them, and they look out and see blue sky? The only reason it's possible is because those buildings turned to dust before they hit the ground, or 90% of them, as Dr. Wood says, between 85 and 90%. So, if you can get somebody to look at this evidence, they agree that it's true and it's valid and it's real, and you look at it in sections, and you can't really say, well, all of it is fake. The firefighters made up their stories. The seismic evidence is fake. The videos are fake. The witnesses don't know what they're talking about. So you then have to deny that 9/11 never happened, really, and it's just some fictitious event, which of course is clearly ridiculous. So that's a point that you're left at, really, when you look at the primary evidence. And there is more than what I've talked about. Obviously, we've only covered elements of it.
I was going to say, and we're only talking about the towers. We're not talking about anything else.
Correct. Correct. And then people say, well, I think quite a common, as you may have experienced this, Jeremy, too, is that, Andrew, you're saying that the towers turned to dust, and people can't kind of process that. So they then start asking about the planes. So what about the planes then? What about the passengers? What happened to them? And because we've heard these stories that, they were on these planes, and the hijackers were saying, you need to call your loved ones and tell them you're going to die, and all of this. What about that, Andrew? And then, of course, I will say, well, that story might be true or it might not be. It doesn't really affect, because we know that a plane crashing into a building like that, as was shown, it can't cause the following events to happen. What can a plane do? Okay, let's say a real plane crashed. What was it full of? It was full of jet fuel. Look at the physics behind that. You've got these hollow, thin aluminium tubes with a bit of titanium in them, and these, engines on the side, which are have harder materials in them, for the engine turbines and this sort of thing. And this allegedly crashed into the towers. But what happened after that? There was a big fireball and a fire, and we saw about, 8, 9, 10 flat floors with flames coming out or something. And again, you can start to study that. And I've got a couple of videos with anomalies in those fires as well. One particular one where you get this little puff of smoke. I won't go into that now, but so you look at those fires. Well, how did those fires cause what I just talked about, this 70 stories of steel turning to dust? How did those fires, why weren't those fires burning on top of Mickey Cross and Jay Jonas? Where did those fires go? It's clearly they weren't impinging on Mickey Cross and his associates. So in other words, the fires and plane crashes had nothing to do with the destruction of the towers. That was just a stunt. That was just a stunt, And so you then got to really go off and do a separate study of what happened with the planes. And that leads to equally troubling questions and conclusions, And Dr. Judy Wood doesn't really go into that. People say, oh, well, she's obviously disinformation because she won't talk about the planes. No, she won't really talk about the planes that much. There is a little bit about the planes and where the towers go. And she shows you, for example, that the plane-shaped hole in the towers before it turned to dust, there's a little sharp angle in it. And the story is that the wingtip cut this hole through the steel of the towers. And that's clearly ridiculous because you have these little nav lights on the end. So she shows you with that part. She just says, look, this idea that the planes did any real sort of damage to the towers, it's just clearly ridiculous. You just have to look at the relative hardness of planes and steel buildings. I say to people, well, if a plane can do that to a building and create this giant hole, as we were shown, then why do you need armor-piercing bullets? When the plane was only doing 500 miles an hour, when even that's impossible when you look at that, because that top speed of a Boeing plane of that type, that can only be achieved when you're at altitude, when the air is much thinner. I mean, again, this is basic physics. 700 feet above sea level, which is where these things allegedly crashed, the atmosphere is much, much thicker. And your top speed there is about 350 or something, 350 miles an hour. But the measured speed, I think.
Speed.
No, that's right. So that story itself, it doesn't stand up to scrutiny once you start looking at it. On the face of it, it sort of stacks up. Oh, you got these bad guys nicking planes. They crash them, and they're horrible to people. They try, they put them at knife point and tell them to tell this story about being hijacked, and we've got those recordings. So surely they're real, aren't they, Andrew? I don't know. I don't know what happened to those people. That's a whole other story. And this is another of the other problems, that people will use one part of the story to debunk another, because they can't believe that one part of the story isn't true, like the plane hijackings. They can't believe that that's not true. They can't grasp that there's possibly another explanation for that. And I say to them just on that one, which is a common sticking point, well, look, if you look at the stories of the planes, you've got some stories that people got on planes, they took off from an airport, they were tracked on radar, according to NORAD and these other bodies. But apart from that, we don't really know what happened to them. We don't, and another study was done while we're on that area by Elias Davidson, and he did a study and he tried to find testimony from people who were on the ground crews at the various airports, Boston and wherever the other ones were. I forget where the airports were that the hijackers meant to have gone. And he looked for people on the ground crew who could tell stories of one of these hijackers, identify one of them from the description, getting on the planes. And he couldn't find one. He couldn't find any stories from any of the ground crew. They weren't in New York. These were at the airports away from the events. None of them could find any stories of any of the hijackers getting on the planes. And if you go onto the BBC website, you'll find these stories that six of the alleged hijackers were around
the passports
after the events. Yeah. And there's a story of the passport. Well, that's a separate thing. But even the BBC were putting out stories about surviving hijackers. So you start to stack these things up and the official explanation quickly falls apart, quickly falls apart.
Also, just to add to what you're saying, Andrew, because we are going to go to a quick break now, but to add to what you're saying, I looked into those, how low can a commercial aircraft fly at that speed? And both Boeing and Airbus, for example, state that those planes, A, cannot fly at that speed, at that low altitude, without breaking apart. They would fall apart. The wings would break off.
That's right.
They're designed not to do that. And the system would simply not allow a plane to fly into a building. It's designed to try and not cause damage.
Yeah, that's right. You know, but then you get all these people like I mentioned being on the Stu Peters show, and Stu Peters asked the Clinton aide, Buzz Passon, he said, oh, could those hijackers have flown the planes into the buildings? And he kind of says, oh, yeah, no problem. What they do is they would have bought simulator time. You know, he says, I don't know, whoever it was one of the airlines or one of the aircraft manufacturers. Oh, yeah, they just sell simulator time all the time. So you just need to book simulator time and practice it a few times. You'd be able to do it no problem, according to him. You know, so you get conflicting stories, and this is how it works. This Buzz Patterson guy, you know, he's a military guy. He's a figure of authority. And people are more likely to believe him on a story, a statement like that, rather than somebody like me. You know, and this is the way that this works. You discharge your thinking to authority. You know, and that gets us back to one of the fundamental points behind Dr. Judy Wood's book. She wants you to think about it for yourself. She gives you the basic evidence, you know, and points out the way things should be, or the way that the evidence, what it should show you or what it doesn't show you, and you then study that for yourself, you know, and you either agree with that or you don't agree with it, or you end up not knowing. You know, it's different in everybody's case, really. But she wants you to take ownership of that knowledge. She doesn't want you to believe anything. And that's my tagline on my website, you know, knowledge, not belief. I try not to believe anything. I try to know as much as I can and believe as little as possible. When it comes to things like what happened to the World Trade Center. So if people say, do you believe it was directed energy weapons that destroyed the towers? I say, no, I don't believe that. I know that that's what happened, because that's the only explanation which explains all the evidence that's available. For me, it's that black and white, you know. And I haven't talked to anybody who's been able to show me otherwise without either insulting me or insulting Dr. Wood, or, you know, just coming out with some nonsense which doesn't really make any sense when you analyze it.
Mm. My name is Jerm, chatting to Andrew Johnson. This is TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
It's sort of amusing watching the leftists that are pushing the whole climate change agenda gawk over how warm the Earth is on satellite data and also the CDAS data. And that CDAS initializes the global temperature every 6 hours. Now, the reason it is so warm is because of the cumulative buildup of heat in the oceans being released into the atmosphere with extra water vapor. You had a very strong El Nino in 97. That forced a step up of temperatures. 2015-16, a step up in temperatures. Not only do we have an El Nino going on now, but we had that massive volcano last year that blasted water vapor into the atmosphere. So what you are actually seeing is a demise of the CO2 argument. The reason it is getting so warm is not because of CO2, it's because of the excess water vapor. And here's another ugly little fact. Where we have weather stations across the planet, it's not nearly as warm. The satellite temperatures, for instance, are 0.9 Celsius above the 30-year running mean. But where we have weather stations, it is only 0.17 Fahrenheit. And that shows you that much of that warming is occurring over the warmer oceans in the Arctic regions, because the colder it is, the more water vapor can make it warmer. You have to look at the relationship. But if you don't look at the relationship and you simply buy what you're being told, you're going to be hoodwinked into believing that some kind of apocalypse is coming. Now, there have been some severe weather events, we know that, but for how warm it is, if so, so what? This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
I want to eat apples and bananas. I need to eat apples and bananas. Why can't I eat apples and bananas?
Support the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks to help provide meals to those in need. Join us at feedingamerica.org.
TNT.
You're with Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Andrew, this conversation can't be held in 1 hour, but let's see what we can do in this final segment. 2 points that I want to bring up quickly. Mini nukes and atomic fusion and that sort of commentary that tends to come up quite often. And the other thing is, well, if it was directed energy, where does it come from? Who's doing it?
Yeah, those are very common questions and common points, Jeremy. Thank you. Yeah. So the nukes and mini nukes, I mean, basically, we didn't really cover this in particular depth, but, you know, we call it bombs in the building. There are various versions of that. I mentioned this on the Stupedia show as well. So how did, you know, if we agree the towers disappeared and the buildings disappeared, or you can say collapsed if you want, we don't agree with that characterization. But how did they disappear? Was it bombs in the building? Did we have thermite? Did we have mini nukes? Did we have hot nukes? You know, these dirty bombs. There's various versions of this. And I write about those in my book, 9/11 Finding the Truth, which is available free from my website as PDF or EPUB. And so we have to look at what those things do. What does thermite do? Well, it creates a very bright yellow-orange flame. It's really bright, and you can see this in various videos. And if you scale that up to the destruction of the towers, it doesn't match up. Yes, we've got some flashes of yellow light in some of the videos, but it's very small in relation to the size of the overall towers. I went through all this in 2006, and that's all in my book. And that involves one of your other guests, partly, I would say, James Fetzer and Stephen E. Jones as well. So, you know, they're all involved in this, and that's all in my book. And people can go and read all the emails and stuff on my website if they care to go, or write to me through there, and I'll direct them to them if they want. We're not going to go into that here. So really, when you get to the nuclear devices, there are different versions again. So what does a nuclear bomb do? Some people dispute now, and there's been a movement of this over the last 10 years, whether nuclear bombs even work. You know, I'm still, my jury's out on that a little bit. But if you look at what we're told about nuclear bombs, and my understanding is, for example, when you look at getting together a critical mass of uranium-235 and you get a nuclear reaction, again, it's very, very bright. It's very loud. It creates very obvious effects of heat, light, sound, and melting. And none of those effects were seen, by and large, on 9/11. Now, people pick me up. Oh, they say, well, if you look at the bottom of the where the World Trade Center was, there's all this melted rock. Well, what does that mean? So there's melted rock. There's also melted rock near volcanoes. Does that mean that somebody planted a nuclear bomb near a volcano? No, of course it doesn't. There may be some volcanic process which explains that rock formation, which is like a circular affair. Certainly, the evidence from 9/11, from witnesses, from the way that the towers disappeared on video, does not at all support the destruction by nuclear devices, either mini, maxi, pre-planted nukes. This story all started in 2008 with Ed Ward. It was then regurgitated by Dmitry Kozlov in about 2011. That's all in my book. Then Heinz Pomner came out and he started saying it. Jim Fetzer has talked about it a lot, and he should know better, basically, but I won't go into that. It does not explain the evidence. It does not explain the seismic readings. It does not explain Mickey Cross and Jay Jonas and how they survived. It does not explain the inverted ambulances, inverted fire trucks, the testimony of David Hansher, the New York Times Daily News photographer, which is all in my book or in Judy's book. It does not explain any of that. So there is so much evidence that is not explainable by hot nukes, mini nukes, maxi nukes, secret nukes, dirty bombs. It doesn't explain it. What we have found out, Dr. Wood found out, there is something to do with radiation. There is a nuclear effect involved, unquestionably. But that nuclear effect, we understand now, we're sort of 99 to 100% sure of this, that it's related to something called cold fusion, because that's the field of research that Stephen E. Jones was involved in. And again, we haven't really got time to go into that here. And I've written about this in my books. I've written about it in various articles. I've got all the audio clips of Stephen E. Jones and him trying to promote this thermite story whilst not really talking about very much his research into cold fusion in the mid-80s. At the time, cold fusion was a thing, or low-energy nuclear reactions. So, you know, we point out that the evidence that we have seen more strongly supports this idea that it was an energy effect related to a nuclear process called cold fusion, or Jones gave it this name, cold fusion. And isn't it a coincidence that the very guy who gave the name cold fusion to this process in the late 1980s, Stephen E. Jones, he coined that term with Paul Palmer. He turns up in the 9/11 scholars group and invites me to join it in 2005. I mean, what are the chances, folks? You know, so you can study all of that. All that is public. And Stephen E. Jones, you know, he's not disputed anything that I've said about it, partly because he can't really, because I've got the audio recordings of him saying these things, you know, and it's documented in scientific papers and stuff. So we're now getting into a little bit, who knows about this directed energy technology? Well, Stephen E. Jones knows about it. I can almost guarantee that. Will he tell you? Probably not, because he's probably under oath not to reveal it, or under contract not to reveal it. Now, that might be me casting aspersions at him, but yeah, it certainly hasn't told me anything about it, you know, and I don't think he will tell anybody about it. But it's a pretty funny coincidence when you look at it. So that then gets us into, you know, bits of how the cover-up works again. And how, for example, you might say, well, Andrew's been a bit cruel to this Stephen E. Jones guy, you know, saying that he knows who did 9/11 or who's got the technology. He's making some pretty serious accusations there. He's a bit of a troublemaker, that Andrew Johnson. He's damaging the truth movement, you know, because he's saying things that might not be true. Well, actually, I haven't said anything that's not untrue. I've made a little bit of speculation. But to go into that cover-up side of the thing, when I started using this sort of talk and pointing out that these people like Jones, and probably Fetzer as well, actually, I think they know, and I've put this in my website, I think they know who did 9/11, you know. I become a divisive figure. And then one guy in the UK called Ian Henshaw, who runs a 9/11 Truth group, or he was doing, I think he still does, he wrote to me in an email, I think this was about, I don't know, 2014, it's in my second book. He says, I don't know if you knew it or not, Andrew, but you are the biggest single cause of the collapse of the 9/11 Truth movement in the UK. To me, you know, me here, this person talking to you, you know. So I don't know what, that made me laugh, really, because if the Truth movement has collapsed, then why is even Ian Henshaw even writing to this movement, which is what he was doing at the time he sent this message out? I mean, it just makes no sense to me, you know. That's another aside, but this is how the cover-up works. You know, people in authority, either in the mainstream or those that establish themselves as an authority figure within the so-called truth movement, and there are various of these people that could be named, they also will try and say, you're just being divisive, Andrew, or Dr. Judy Wood, just she just said all these terrible things about me, you know, and blah blah blah. And then people sometimes believe that. They don't actually study. I had this ding dong with this chap called Henrik Palmgren from Red Ice Radio, and he actually encouraged his listeners to send me nasty messages, and they didn't actually listen to what I'd actually said. They only listened to the first bit of it, and then they just went on at me, you know. And then again, Henrik Palmgren was a figure in the so-called truth movement, but I didn't say anything that was untrue about him. Yes, I was critical of him, you know. So this is the point that I get to. So those are some things there. That, and going back to the directed energy, we don't know where it came from exactly. We don't know who owns it. What we do know is it involved so-called field effects. It almost certainly involved microwave energy. It involves the Earth's magnetic field, and there were effects on gravity, which happened as well. And that was brought out in both witness testimony. And, for example, I mentioned the inverted cars, which we've got a number of pictures of from around the streets of 9/11 on the day. So you're talking about something that is not a beam from space. It's not a laser. It doesn't create much heat. That's the other big thing. That's what differentiates this from Maui as well, because most of the stuff from Maui appears to have high heat. From 9/11, we don't seem to have had much heat. Now, yes, there were apparent fires, and some of those fires may have been hot fires, but some of the characteristics of those fires, as Dr. Judy Wood writes about in her book, showed they weren't hot, or weren't in all cases hot. There were some weird fires. She just called them weird fires. So, and this is something that was seen in the experiments done by John Hutchison in 2006, 2007. You know, he had these weird fires. So there was another data point there that seemed to match up.
we are starting to run out of time, Andrew, so I guess this is my last question. What does it mean if this does come out? What does it mean actually in reality if it turns out that directed energy weapons were used and it's now become accepted?
Well, I mean, it's the end of a lot of the narratives that have been pushed on the world. For example, the climate change narrative, which is a big one that everyone's been subjected to at the moment. It's the end of that, really, because the evidence from 9/11 shows that you can get energy from nowhere. It shows that it can be got out of the ether. It shows that you can have changes in materials with little or no heat. It shows that you can affect the force of gravity, and this is something I write about in one of my other books, not directly to do with 9/11. So the energy scarcity narrative is gone. The climate change narrative is gone. It's finished. And really, a lot of the New World Order agenda, which people like Alex Jones talk about, that won't work. People would realize that couldn't work, because we're talking about a world of abundance, not a world of scarcity. We're talking about all of that. We're talking about, we haven't got onto Hurricane Erin, for example, and the indications were that Hurricane Erin was manipulated or steered before and after 9/11. So it looks like, yes, we do have man-made climate change, but it's done for nefarious reasons directly. It's not accidental because of industrial processes or pollution or anything like that. They have technology which can alter the weather, and I think we've been seeing this more and more in use over the last 10 years, and I think a few people are realizing it. And it's not just to do with chemtrails, what people call chemtrails. I did a study of chemtrails for 9 years, and that's written up in one of my other books about climate change, also free from Check the Evidence. And the energy question comes into that as well. So it's all interrelated. And it's interrelated with human consciousness as well, and what makes us work the way that we do as in human beings. That all ties into this whole picture of energy and consciousness, directed energy, and also psychological operations. Because once people see that the psychological operation has been done on them, and I've had people writing to me, somebody wrote to me quite recently that, or maybe it was a YouTube comment on there, that they'd read Dr. Judy Wood's book, and it completely changed their life. It changed their whole light outlook on the world and the universe completely, you know. And so that I think is what's on the cards. The more people that realize this, they're going to realize the scale of the deception and all of these other deceptions that run on us, you know, money, health, they're all going to start to fade away as well. So that's why I'm so persistent with this, you know, because it really is, it's really like a real big weakness in the House of Cards, and I'm going to just keep chipping away at it whenever I get chance. So I'm grateful for opportunities like this to come on and talk in this way. And maybe people think, well, this Andrew Johnson guy, you know, actually saying some crazy stuff, but actually, you know, it's when I think about it, I'm going to go and check this and see if he's just not talking out of his backside, you know, maybe he's not. I'll try and check this out, you know, and that's my hope, really.
Okay. Andrew, very, very quickly, time is now against us. How can I get your work or follow your work?
Yeah, just go to checktheevidence.com. There's lots of stuff on there. I wouldn't claim that the website is particularly well organized. If you're interested in anything you've heard today, click on the contact form and write to me, and I will email you back with links or whatever, or any questions. People can ask me anything. I don't really, you know, school, family, I don't mind, you know, it's really not an issue. So thanks for listening, and thanks for the opportunity to talk.
It's a great pleasure chatting to you. Andrew Johnson, thank you for joining me in the trenches. I'll definitely invite you back.
Thanks.
All right, just very quickly before I go, let me just give you a update. I am going to go away for 3 weeks or so. I'll be back, I think, on the 23rd of October, so you will not hear me for the next 3 weeks. I am traveling this evening to Amsterdam, going to be doing one or two talks there. And then I'm going to very north of the country between Namibia, South Africa, and Botswana. There's a region of the Kalahari Desert known as Galagadi. My wife and I booked about a year ago. We are going to just get into the bush, into the desert at least, just for a couple of weeks, just to switch off from everything and just lie under the stars, enjoy nature, look for some lions, some leopards, typical African animals, and just enjoy rebooting. That's what I need. I need to reboot. So you will see me, or you will hear from me about three weeks from now. And up next is Joe Hoft. Man, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting to Andrew Johnson. Wow, this is a freaking mind bender of a conversation. And I strongly, strongly recommend you dive into this a little bit, because what we think we know, we need to hold up a mirror. Anyway, listen, I'm going to catch you in 3 weeks' time. Thank you, Alex, for making us sound somewhat professional. And I'm out of here. I think that's it. That's my housekeeping done. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.